This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris and you're listening to The Property Show. It's the last Friday of the month and time for the Property Legal Clinic that we have every month with our resident legal expert, Chris Dunn of Chia Associates. Today, he's going to tackle two of your legal conundrums. Thank you so much for sending your questions in. Now, we have two questions here. One from Gim Take, which she is asking about strata living. And later on in the show, we'll be hearing from Nabil, who is asking about eviction notices. All right, Chris, let's dive right in. First of all, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us on the show. It's good to have you back, Chris.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, so a question here from Gim Take. I own an apartment which is rented out. Recently, the electric cable from the TNB meter to my unit short-circuited. This cable is running on cable tray above the common corridor, and I had to pay for the cable replacement as the management refused to pay. Now, kindly advise whether the management office representing the joint management body is obliged to pay as the cable is running along the common area. So that's her question, Chris. How would you respond to this query from Gim Take?
I think the getting from the information from the question alone already suggested an answer. The fact that this part of the damage is actually in the common area, notwithstanding it's actually a utility, which is the electrical meters that link to the unit where Gim Take own. We are actually looking at a common area's damage. So a common area damage should be maintained by the management. So therefore, in a very short answer to this, is the management have to pay, right? Unless there is any other thing. But in this case, I'm thinking that because it's also utility, so you can't live without electricity this day. So I'm just saying to you that if it's faulty, instead of start to arguing with the management, pay for it first. Get it managed, get yourself connected so that you are in with your utility, you can enjoy the unit proper. And then next thing is to then pursue with the management to say that because of the location of this meter is actually in the common area, therefore it should be borne by the management, which is what we call the management body at that time, be it what we call developers, be it the joint management body or the management corporation, depending which one.
Well, in this case, the joint management body had actually refused to pay.
Right.
So unless you know your rights, how would you know whether you can pursue this claim with the management body?
I mean, in a very simple way, it's very simple. Whatever is in your unit, whatever is in your unit, then you take charge. Whatever that's not within your unit, then you're not responsible. So if it's with, so I put it also another context is that whatever that's not in your unit is common property, you know, or other people's unit. So if the damage happened to be in a common property, let's think about it. It is also the duty of the management to ensure security of the common property. So being damaged in this sense could be done by a person, another person, or failure to maintain properly. So it should be the responsibility of the management office. And by the way, the management do have money for it because they do collect service charge every month, and there's such thing called a sinking fund as well.
Right.
So if you ask me, our friend here, Gim Take, actually indirectly pay for it.
Yeah.
It's just that it is paid through the service charge and sinking fund. And if it's a common, I would argue that it should be the duty of the management at a given time. So if they refuse to pay, then of course my advice to Gim Take is very simple. Right now, we have a lot of recourse where you can actually address some of this issue without the need to engage a lawyer, that you can go to, of course, the Strata Management Tribunal. All right, you take $100 to start a case. Right. And then the other one is you can also refer to the Commissioner of Building to get a decision in this regard. So in any event, I think the way to put forward a case in this is that because it's in a common area, all right, and because Gim Take do contribute to this, for all intent and purposes, it should be responsible of the management to pay for such damages.
Is there somewhere, Chris, that that homeowners can go to refer to what their rights are? You know, right now, I mean, Gim Take only has the word of the management office saying the management office doesn't want to pay. How would she know that this is her
now, I said
right?
There's actually two places you can go. One is your Strata Management Tribunal, which means that you're putting in your claim to say, hey, this is, let's say, I think $500 for the restoration of the cable meter, for example. So that your claim will be like that. So from there, you will know whether you have a case or you don't have a case.
So you have to escalate it to
correct,
that point.
Correct. Number two is a COB. You can get a direction from a COB, which is called the Commissioner of Building. In that case, it's actually attached to your local authority. So look for the local authority, ask for the guy called Commissioner of Building, Pasuruhan Jaya Bangunan.
So there's nowhere that you can get like an online...
You can write to me.
Write to you. Show for sure. Thank you so much, Kim Tech, for doing that. I'm just wondering, how much could this escalate to? I mean, you're talking about a replacement cable here that could, you know, be a few hundred ringgit maybe. Have you seen cases, Chris, where it could escalate to thousands of ringgit, in fact?
No, but I don't know. I suppose there's no market price for TMB cable or meter
But other kind of property that you have had to replace, in this case, this is a common corridor.
Right.
Would there be other cases where, you know, you could look at a bill that is quite hefty, not realizing that, in fact, it's not really your...
No. I'm just saying to you, it's like if you are actually being in a situation in this case, like I said, utility, you need to use it, right? So you have to pay for it first and then only you start to argue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be silly to keep arguing without installing and restoring electricity back into your room, in your unit. So in that sense, I'm saying that, you know, you have to weigh it, you know, whether it is absolutely essential or not essential and which one can comfort. I think at the end of the day, common sense and logic. To put it very simple, in this case, for example, if you said that common area is supposed to maintain by the management at the given time. So then my next question is that to even install the meter, to do the meter, I need consent from the management. So if you ask me, which means that the management do have control of the common area. So if anything damaged in the common area, should therefore be the responsibility of the management.
Fair enough. Yeah. Hope we answered your question there. Now, again, if you have any questions for Chris on legal matters of property ownership, just write to us at property@bfm.my or you can send us a voice note via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Just make sure you mention that it's for The Property Show. More with Chris Tan in just a few minutes, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning. Thanks for staying with The Property Show. I'm Melissa Idris with Chris Tan from Chur Associates here for the monthly Property Legal Clinic. Now, Chris, there's a question here from Nabil. Now, he sent in this voice note.
Hello, Mr. Chris. I'm calling about my daughter's predicament. She's renting a condo in Petaling Jaya since last year with a one-year rental agreement. The deal was done through a property agent. After 10 months, my daughter received a call from the agent saying that the owner of the property informed him that the bank is seizing the property due to failure of payment of that premises. My daughter was asked through that phone conversation with the agent to vacate the premises immediately. My daughter refused because there's no written order or any letter from any party. However, one day when she came back from work, there was some bank agents sealing the condo unit. I think this is very unfortunate and it's very unfair. So what can she do?
Now, Chris, what should she do?
Well, in that case, I'm thinking the default in this case is the default by the landlord of not paying the monthly installment to the bank for the bank loan that she have procured for the purchase of the unit. So on that basis, when you say it's foreclosed, where they will come and seal and everything, then I suspect it would be the bank. So the financier who actually financed the purchase of the unit in the first place. So what should the daughter do? Nabil's daughter should first and foremost talk to the bank. All right. I think the intention now is to recover whatever her assets inside.
But she's just a renter. So would she have to talk to the bank directly?
Because she has to make a very clear situation to the bank to say that she's not the owner of the unit and the person who assigned the unit to the bank for the purpose of the loan is not her. and she have asset in the unit.
Right.
I mean, let's put it this way. I know it's for a 1 year renter, right? And whether the landlord obviously is not in a position to honor it because the bank have called on default and tried to sell the building already. So when she talk to the bank, she can do two things. All right. Number one is to negotiate for her to have access to the unit so that she can recover her own asset. And the second thing that she can actually negotiate to actually talk to the bank to say that, you know, because the bank actually been granted what we call a power of attorney to act as if they are the owner. So when you take a loan, one of the documents that you sign is called the power of attorney. So therefore, pursuant to the power of attorney, they can act as if they are the owner and as if they are the landlord. And if the bank can consent to it, the bank can even consent to the fact that, hey, I'll let you stay on to complete the 1 year tenure, which is the 2 years, provided you pay the rent to me.
Okay.
Right. So in that sense, that's also possible because it's also very common in the PA that they, you know, any renter proceed or whatever, in this case or in the case of a default on the loan arrangement would actually be entitled by the bank.
Mm.
Right. The only concern I have for Nabil's daughter in this case is really, can she recover the deposit? Because the deposit is directly paid to the landlord.
Correct.
Right, and it's not paid to the bank. Mm. So in this case, normally if you're looking at a norm situation, a 3-month deposit has been paid. So in this case, even if she can recover her asset from being granted the access back to the unit and take it out, right, she will still lose 3 months of deposit.
Correct. Yeah. I have to say, Nabil, thank you so much for sending in this question because this question terrifies me to the depths of my soul, Chris. I am also renting and I've never met the landlord. I've only dealt through a property agent. So what is stopping, you know, this situation happening for someone like me, for instance? Can eviction notices be delivered over the phone, Chris? This sounds highly odd to me.
By the way, that is not an eviction notice.
Okay, so the property agent calling Nabil's daughter saying that the bank is seizing the property and she should vacate the premises, that is not considered an eviction notice?
Nope. Because it's very strange in this case, you have to communicate through the agent.
Right.
And if I'm the bank, if I need to really come and seal the property and whatnot, obviously there should be more actions. So it could be challenged, but I don't think the tenant is interested because to challenge it alone, you are doing it for the benefit of the landlord in that sense. For example, you know, they must deliver the notice to say that, hey, we are coming to recover the whole thing, you know, and all these things.
Oh, so the
and
bank just, should have actually given a written order to the tenant in
this
some
case. Form of notice in
some
this case. So like, for example, obviously, if I'm Nabil's daughters, I won't actually vacate the unit because it's just a phone call, right? And how can I rely on a phone call to say that I need to vacate? And if that's the case, I think even before the condominium was sealed, she should have just called up the agent and again called up to say whether they can have access to the landlord and clarify the situation, because nothing is in black and white. To me, it's just a verbal communication, and bank don't do eviction by just asking the agent to call get out. I don't think so. So in that case, so I'm saying to you is that the fact that she come back to the condo and say that it was sealed and all these things, that's where she need to then talk to the bank. Actually, when you see a sale the property, it also means that, you know, they claim responsibility over these things. When they do it, there's a person you can call. I think it is a case of if the intention is to recover her personal belonging and get out, so I think that's easy. Because I think the bank or whoever who's foreclosing this property or who's selling this property would understood that this.
But it's also such a hassle for her, I'm sure, you know, not having access to her items.
Of course. I mean, hassle is already a certainty.
What about the deposit, Chris? So you said that, you know,
because
that could be the worry, right?
Yes, because the deposit is paid to the landlord in that case.
What recourse does she have to recover her deposit?
To the landlord. The breach of it's actually a breach of. I mean, if you ask me legally, what recourse you have? I mean, there's two things here. Number one is to recover her own personal thing because of the sale. So that's one. Number two, if that she want to recourse because there's a breach of tenancy here, because the landlord is not honoring the 1 year tenancy period. So then she can then put a civil suit against the landlord, including asking for the refund of the deposit.
Wow.
Yeah. But then again, how useful is it? And looking at the circumstances, if the landlord default on his own payment, the chances are the deposit or retained earlier could be used in any way.
Yeah. Chris, is there any protection that renters like myself and like Nabil's daughter can take, you know, before we sign the tenancy agreement to make sure that this incident doesn't happen to us?
I think if you talk about protection, I think this incident here is very, very hard to protect against because we didn't know that the landlord would actually default, correct? Because it could be default long before you rent it, right? Even with your money, you could be paying, but then it's still already in default. So there's no way. I mean, I've never seen a tenant to go and see a landlord and say, hey, can I see your bank statement? You know, in that sense.
Then you give me proof
that you actually paid. But I think let's think about it. I think this is a risk that sometimes not avoidable. But if you want, I think I would suggest number one, first and foremost, get a good understanding who's your landlord rather than dealing through the agent, because ultimately that's the person that you want to deal with, and therefore understand their situation a bit. Then if you're not comfortable with whatever you see, whatever you heard, whatever, during the contact with the landlord, then don't proceed.
Pay attention to the red flags.
Correct. So I'm saying that, you know, these are like the communication subject rather than legal subject. But I'm highlighting that, you know, when you go into these things, to me, this is very hard to avoid. This is very hard to avoid as a tenant.
Sure.
And the balance of power, just to highlight to you, is that the law have always been very good in protecting tenant.
Oh.
Right? In Malaysia, especially because we are ex-Commonwealth, we inherited the British law, which is possession is 9/10 of the law. So it's very hard to evict you as a tenant, just for a start. Just make sure you stay in a house that nobody can see it while you're not there. So I think you're fine. Yeah.
All right, there. I hope we answered your question there, Nabil. I think we have time to squeeze in one more question, Chris. Okay. Now, this is a question from Samsia. She said, hi, I listened to your property legal clinic show for April about property ownership by foreigners. Is it true that if a person is not born in Selangor, can the law prohibit the person from buying land or leasehold property in Selangor? And your response is very much appreciated, Chris.
Okay, so
from
Samsia, the first answer to you is not true, right? I mean, Selangor is one of the most liberal states around. They don't have this very protective policy in that sense, which means that you don't have to be born in Selangor to buy any land in Selangor, or or any leasehold property in Selangor. The only exception that I can think of at this moment is on the low cost. Issue. So if you are buying anything through the arrangement of Lembaga Perumahan Hartanah Selangor, which is the LPHS, that's what I understand, that you have to be a person from Selangor. Therefore, if your IC number does not show up correctly, then you can't buy. That you are born in Selangor.
So I believe in that episode we were talking about property ownership by foreigners, right? Foreigners coming to Malaysia to buy property.
Yes.
Are there any restrictions around the country where if you're not born in a certain state, you're not allowed to? It just doesn't apply to Selangor.
To Selangor, but happen to other countries. For example, number one is Kelantan. So if you're not from Kelantan, you're not born in Kelantan, you cannot buy anything in Kelantan. So it's a very
common... You need a Kelantan address in your IC.
Correct. No, it's a Kelantan IC number. Because
Kelantan
what
IC
it means
number.
That, you know, with the middle digit, the two digit in the middle. So if you are not Kelantan, you can't buy. So I thought that's simple enough. And the other one that is a little bit challenging is Sabah and Sarawak. So you have to understand a little bit more. It's not as of right you can buy. So even you are from Malaysia. So one of the jokes that I recently shared with a lot of my audience, I said, hey, even you're Malaysian doesn't mean that you can buy everywhere. So I said that in that sense, you are no different from foreigner. But I think the best response I give to Samsia, just for her comprehension of why this is like that, is because Malaysia is a federation. So it's a federation. You look at the flag of Malaysia, it's very similar to USA. So the next time you think about Malaysia, you think about USM, all right, United States of Malaysia. The reason why I want to say that is because every state have their own law, for example, in the States. But in Malaysia, every state have their own law in relation to the land. And land under the federal constitution is the absolute discretion of the state itself. So they can decide anything without the need to consult. So what the federal policy, for example, when they talk about foreigner and everything else, is just a general policy. The reason why we call it policy is not a foreign acquisition law, but foreign policy means policy can change and policy differ from state to state. I mean, like right now, Selangor and right now in Penang, the threshold is already different from the federal one. So for the past few years, so it's 2 million and above for Penang Island. And
2
also,
million and above for
yes,
Penang Island.
And also certain first tier area in Penang, right? And also certain first tier area in Selangor.
Right.
So if you ask me, if you talk about all the usual suspects, the PJ, the Subang, the Shah Alam, these are 2 million and above. Correct? So unless you're talking about Sabah, Bernam or whatever, you know, the kind of places, then they still have a 1 million. Which also lead me to another potential conclusion. I'm speculating. I'm not sure it will happen because both our ex-chief minister and Menteri Besar of Selangor and Penang are both now holding
economy
in the federal level. So they could raise the federal threshold to 2 million.
We'll have to wait and see more from the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Economic Affairs. But Chris, thank you so much for answering those questions. Everyone, thank you for sending your questions in. Now, there were a whole bunch of questions that we didn't get to answer this month, but we will be answering them on the 24th of August. That's the next episode of the Monthly Property Legal Clinic with Chris Tan. But for now, thank you so much, Chris, for answering those questions.
Thank you.
He'll be back next month, so make sure you get all those questions in. We've got the 10 o'clock news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for The Morning Run. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.